welcome to the Cursed Checkpoint, the mini podcast of HorribleNight.com. My name is Ethan Moses, and joining me today is Josh Lee of JoshLee.com fame, and we're going to be talking about the roguelike genre or subgenre of role-playing video games. It's a pretty new genre to me. Josh Lee has a little bit more experience than I do, but we're just going to kind of talk about the ins and outs of it and why or why it is not as appealing to us as we would like. So what is a roguelike? Josh Lee, let us know.
The loose definition of a roguelike would be just a turn-based role-playing game usually noted by its what I would consider terribly arcane ASCII character graphics, permadeath for your characters, randomly generated dungeons, and generally just really tough difficulty. And the name roguelike stems from the game Rogue, which came out. It was written by one guy. Came out in 1980, I think. It's what inspired this genre of games. And most of the games that you would see that is considered like a kind of a mainline roguelike, they all kind of look and feel much the same. Some of the inner workings would be different, but that's the gist of it.
And people may be wondering out at home, why are we even talking about this the subject right now? Which is a good question. Actually, the roguelike genre, I was first exposed to it recently in the game The Binding of Isaac. Now, it's debatably whether or not that's a pure roguelike. It's often been described as an arcade-like roguelike, though, Josh, I believe you and I feel the same, that it is indeed a roguelike game.
Yeah. It's got... It has all of the, it hits all the bullet points, mm-hmm. and it's more, it's definitely as much of a roguelike as, most of the other games people would say, their branches off of that, the original Rogue and stuff like that, and NetHack and stuff.
Yeah. Well, and these games are just interesting because of that aspect of difficulty that you were talking about, especially with, The Binding of Isaac, and why we kind of first started talking about doing a checkpoint on this topic is because, nowadays games let you save. You kind of know what you're getting into. There's a lot of trial and error to games now. And you get, whether you get lives or, again, if you have that saving function or checkpoints, these games don't have that. And that was a very appealing aspect of The Binding of Isaac to me because, again, it was like, wow, I really have to be on my game. I kind of felt like, that nostalgia was coming back from the games back in the 90s when we were growing up, in the 80s, where if you died, you died. I mean, there were games I just never beat. And this kind of gave me that feeling, and it got me interested in this genre. And then or subgenre. And then the next game actually I got into was Dungeons of Dreadmoor, which came out, I want to say, about 5 months ago, 6 months ago, something like that.
Yeah, pretty recent.
Through Steam. And I kind of got hooked to it. And looking up the background of it, I was interested to see that there's kind of a mini culture around these games, that there's some really hardcore roguelike fans out there that just kind of, like I mentioned with The Binding of Isaac, kind of really don't necessarily want to branch out too much from that classic, style of gaming with the ASCII graphics and the turn-based gameplay. They themselves, on a few forums, were talking about how The Binding of Isaac was not a roguelike, and they had all these, reasons why it wasn't. And, that kind of made us talk about this after a podcast a couple weeks ago, is this a type of genre that needs to stick to every bullet point, or is this one that, can expand? Because, again, this isn't the type of game that a lot of people necessarily are going to want to play, just because mm-hmm. it is kind of difficult, and it does have a pretty high barrier of entry. And typically people don't like to, just randomly be killed. And that's what can happen in these games, definitely.
Well, it is a good point that The Binding of Isaac, probably the people that would say it's not a roguelike would point towards its action based combat. It's like real time, almost Legend of Zelda like in its combat and stuff. However, it hits every other point, of a roguelike, and I play it like a roguelike You know, so for me, it still fits in the genre, and the appeal to me, which is why I like kind of branching out and trying some different ones, is I play these games as a like a little as a filler because they're hard and I suck at them, so I always die in pretty short order. So I can play. I actually played just a little while ago. I had played a game of Dungeon Crawl, and I lasted 17 minutes. I went two levels into the dungeon. I leveled up one time. My halfling hunter, Puntos, was using his sling very proficiently, killing all kinds of little newts and things, and I ran into one little hobgoblin that just wouldn't go down, and I died a terrible death after drinking a potion that was, I thought maybe it was a heal potion because I had three of them. Turns out it wasn't. And it was a potion of degeneration. It made me weak and I couldn't hit anything and he killed me. So, you know, and it was fun. But that's like Binding of Isaac, same thing for me. I've probably only played that game for, I don't know, like 3 hours total. But I've probably played it in like as full games, like, I don't know, maybe 15 to 20 times. I mean, I don't last very long in that game. I'm just not that good, but that's okay. I have fun with it. It's like, I don't have to be the best to enjoy it.
And, when it's like, it should be frustrating, you know, because again, I play a lot like you, though. I put, I think, like 16 hours into Binding of Isaac. I got a little too into it one long weekend, but yeah, I mean, it is. You play the games, because a lot of these games seem so, you know, I kind of compare, and when we're talking RPGs, and, you know, right now an RPG that I happen to be playing, an action RPG, would be Skyrim, and I compare that, and it's tough to get into that game for short periods of time, so you almost need, like, a counterbalanced RPG to play so that you don't get lost in it, you know? In these games, you die so quickly, it's difficult to get, you know, kind of, like, sunk into it for too long. You know, my wife will often tell me, don't play that game because you're just going to be playing all day, but with these type of games, she's like, it's okay, you can go ahead and play it. And because she knows I'm going to die really, really quickly. And I think that, you know, speaking to Dungeons of Dreadmoor, it's actually cool because they have a system set up that you actually get points for the longer you last. So you're almost dealing with trying to beat your high score as you go. So you can kind of keep track of how much better you are at the game. And just kind of like you were talking about, you know, the random nature of the game is it's like the ultimate video game griefer, you know, like it's just literally I was at a point where I was playing well. I'd leveled up a couple times and it's same thing. I think I drank a potion that I just made my character explode. I mean, there was nothing. it wasn't even like a degeneration thing. It was like they just exploded and it's fun. You know, it's appealing. I don't know. Like if that would have happened to me in any other game, I probably would have gotten pissed. But for some reason, you know, this kind of game lends itself to kind of just getting the crap kicked at you and you not really minding too much. And which I think is another reason why I think a lot of people won't necessarily get into these games, because they could get really frustrated if they think that they're going to sit down and have that long, drawn out, you know, gameplay session with it.
Yeah, don't play, especially if you're new to roguelikes, do not play them that way. Don't think like I'm going to sit down and have like a big session. Just do it when you're like, hey, I got a second, and find your game. Maybe it's Dungeons of Dreadmoor because it's on Steam and it looks a little nicer, whatever. I can't play the games with the ASCII graphics. I can't do it. Not that I'm a graphics whore, but I actually don't like trying to parse the information that's on the screen with the ASCII characters or trying to go to some chart and figure out what everything is and all that kind of stuff. I like some tiles, which most of the games have now. So, so that, you know, simple 2D sprite, you know, graphics, good enough. So if you're going to play these games, you need to just sit down knowing that, you know what, I'm going to go in, I'm going to die. Maybe you're going to play a couple of games in one sitting, but if you spend more than a half hour playing it, like your first time, then you probably are just banging your head against a wall. It's like you play a lot of games like this, probably anything that's really hard, you know, maybe it's Dark Souls or something. It's like you play a session, you get your ass kicked. You want to throw your controller. You're so pissed. You walk away from it. And then, you know, 8 hours later, you're like, okay, I want to play again. That was actually pretty fun. So that's how I treat it. And you can play it. There's versions of like NetHack that I've played. That's probably the most popular one that I've played on like a DS, like a homebrew version, which is pretty cool. They've got several versions on iOS. You can play them on any PC or a Mac or Linux or whatever. Almost all these, you know, the computer-based versions have installers for all those OSs. So, like, you can kind of get it wherever. So, like, at work, you know, and during your break or something like that, you can play them. And since most of them are turn-based, the game doesn't do anything while you're not interacting with it. So if you don't move, the enemies don't move, that kind of thing. Time doesn't pass.
So if your boss calls you, you can kind of, you know, put a screensaver on and, you know, take care of it. So yeah. Hey, that works. Now NetHack actually came up a couple times when I was looking up information on roguelike. Kind of tell me about that. Is it more of the standard, you know, roguelike game, yeah, or is there something kind of that's separating it from other games? Because again, it does come up quite a bit.
Well, like the original Hack was another Rogue derivative that came out, I think it was like early 80s. And then the NetHack version of it that's played via Telnet. So you need like a Telnet client, like on Windows or wherever. You could use PuTTY, which is super easy to use. It's free. And you connect to a server. And when you're playing online like this with the Telnet access, you're only going to use the ASCII graphics, the non-graphical interface. So you log in, and then you're on a server playing. Now, it's not multiplayer, but the cool thing with this was that you would be able to you can, like, watch other people play to anybody that's connected, which is cool because you can see people that are good, although sometimes they move so fast you can't learn a whole lot. But yeah, it's fun to see it's fun to see other newbies and, like, just run into, you know, wizards and shit and just get owned. So then you can also so you're playing, like, your own game, and then you can run into the ghosts of other dead characters. If you fight them, if you can beat them, usually it's like really good XP. They can also whip your ass, and that sucks. But it's kind of a, and some of these games will have like chat interface as well, so you can talk to other people and stuff like that. I think Tome has that. So yeah, it's an online version, really, and most of these games now do have servers, so you can play it like this. But I've tried a couple times, and again, I just kind of went back to, hey, I need some sprites.
Need something to look at.
Yeah.
Now talking about these type of games, and again, you know, I think about video games, I think about kind of strategy. You know, you play a first person shooter, you know, online, there's a strategy to it. You know, you play an action game, there's some strategy to it. Do you think that there's a strategy to these games, or is the fact that you can just totally get the crap kicked out of you just quickly make it kind of a type of game that you need to play as random as the game is presented to you?
Yeah, you know, well, there's definite strategies. And you can go onto like a wiki for most of these games and then get like tips and, you know, tips for beginners and then more advanced stuff. And, I would almost suggest at least the first couple times not looking at that stuff, because part of the fun of the roguelikes is that just random bullshit that happens to you where you go, oh, I found a scroll. That's cool. And then, you know, yeah, read it, see what happens. You know, like if it's good, chances are it'll just fizzle out and you won't even be able to use it, you know? Or if it's bad, chances are it is going to work and you're just going to get hosed, you know? Or like, oh, cool, it's a magic dagger, and then you equip it and, oh, it's cursed, you can't remove it, and it's draining your strength.
That's the thing. Like, the stuff that's good doesn't last long, and the stuff that's bad is like, it works 99% of it. And it's really bad, it's funny. It's I laugh every time I die. There's not many games like that, but I laugh every time I die with these type of games.
I know. It's always some bullshit too. Like it's something like you just did not like how, like completely, it's like a dice roll, you know, like how in the hell did that thing happen? And so the strategy comes into play for mostly like what not to do. And as you get better, you know, you start to just kind of learn like certain things that you would do, like as you get more, you know, like farther into the game. Like a lot of these games would have like religious altars where you can go and pray to your god and try to, you know, that kind of stuff. But some of those things have too big of a chance for me to you know, to ruin my game. And if I'm that far in, for me, that's really good. And there's like some stuff I won't do. I will not touch a magic fountain. I won't touch an altar, you know, that kind of thing. Like, don't, if you find a shopkeeper, don't attack him. He will murder you. There's some golden rules that I play by. And I also never play magic users because it is a, it's like a kind of a slow build. Usually with magic users are kind of weak early on. Unless you get real lucky with your like either starting scrolls and stuff like that or items. So if you like real early on, if you get some like find some really good drops from enemies and stuff, you might do okay. But magic users are definitely like an advanced kind of thing. So I'll stick with like warriors or guys with like a ranged weapon, like that halfling I was talking about earlier. I was using a sling and I'm just like, you know, chucking stones at dudes and kicking a lot of ass from afar. And that's how I usually kind of like to play. Just my survivability real early on is a little bit better. I'm probably kind of giving myself by playing at such a one-dimensional character, like as you get deeper into the dungeon. But that's my strategy. And other people, I'm sure, you know, play the game differently.
Well, I think it's a really good strategy because you and I were talking, you know, a couple of weeks back, and I, you know, and especially in Dungeons of Dreadmoor, because it in and of itself has all kinds of different, you know, skills that you can pick at the beginning of the game, as opposed to just picking one, you know, class. You've got, you know, different skills like fleshmancy, which is like necromancy, but using flesh to create different things. You've gross. Got necromancy, you've got all these magic skills. And I always went with magic because, again, just like you said, like, you know, a magic user, the benefit comes later on in the game. And a lot of people think, okay, I'll, you know, play it safe and then make it, you know, and be fine towards the end of the game and not have to worry about it too much. Well, I got killed by a potato, literally a potato. I mean, that's this game doesn't, you know, it, like it's one thing to be killed by a dragon, even a hobgoblin. To me, a hobgoblin, that's okay. But in Dungeons of Dreadmoor, they've got things like potatoes, like they're mad potatoes, they're big potatoes, but it's still a potato. So, you know, my magic user that
I... And it was poisoned or was this an actual enemy?
No, it's actually an enemy potato. It's an actual, it's an actual moving potato that takes issue with you tramping around its dungeon, and
it's like a step below a Goomba.
Even. I'd give it two steps. I mean, a Goomba is one thing, but it's a potato, you know. And I saw the potato, I thought, you know, there's no way that this potato is going to do anything to me. This is a low level creature, you know. It's like the classic slime in most RPGs. I'll kill it. I'll move on, and it one hit took me out. It was like a high level enemy.
Potato.
And you don't expect that kind of stuff, but that's potato what the roguelike crits. Is all about. Yeah, I mean, it's just like, it doesn't care. You know, it doesn't, like most games, the low-level enemies are in the beginning of the game. In this game, sometimes if you step on the wrong portal or you unlock the wrong door, you're going to get just totally mobbed. And the one aspect of strategy that I have taken from it is I kind of avoid potions unless I absolutely need it. Like, I've got one hit point left and it's I'm gonna die no matter what, so I can test the potion. And it's always in those situations that the potion's not bad, you know. But it's always when I'm at my most powerful that I drink a potion that's basically like, hey, now you're back to level one, and then you die, you know. So
unidentified items is like a number that's a killer. You know, you got to get the scroll of identify, and that's another constant across the board. Like Binding of Isaac does a pretty awesome job of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've ruined a perfectly good game of that last week where I was and again I've said this, I really do suck at these games. Like I've never actually gotten to the second like level, like out of the basement, the next part into the first screen, and then I died like right immediately after. But I had a really good run, I had great power ups, and I saw the devil. That's the first time I'd seen the devil, and he has like an offer, you know, you can pick one of these things. And I did like a pact, and I didn't know what it was going to do. And it gave me one half of a heart of health, but it had like super laser beam mouth.
Yeah.
And I died immediately. The first hit, boom. Like, God damn it. I was doing so well. I just screwed myself because I didn't know what the item did, you know, like every time.
Yeah. And that game does a good job of, like, for some reason in that game, when I'm doing really well in those situations, I take those big gambles and it never pays off. You know, like in some games, you meet the devil and maybe you get some cool stuff. You can tell your buddies about it later. But yeah, Binding of Isaac, I always I play that game as safe as I possibly can. And I like that game too, because, you know, unlike a lot of these games, there's you know, you're dealing with like the capsules or the pills that you can take, and the items that you get, but you don't have a whole lot to dig through. So I think, you know, this is probably a good game if you happen to listen to us talk and you think, oh, I'm interested in these games, this is probably a good one to kind of get a taste of the mechanics, but not necessarily the gameplay. Because again, mm-hmm. The Binding of Isaac is different from that perspective, because it does have that Legend of Zelda feel to it. But just to get that idea and to get used to just being basically pooped on by the gaming gods at random times, it's probably a good place to start. You know, it's a great game as well, but yeah, because in that one, I think that I've only made it to or beaten the boss one time, and just like these games, it was all luck. Like, I won based on luck. Like, the enemies that were coming at me were just the perfect enemies to fight. I happened to randomly, you know, run in the correct direction. I mean, so sometimes luck pays off in your favor as well in these games, but not very often. It's like maybe 1% of the time good stuff happens to you. 99% of the time, again, game poops right on top of your face. Yeah. So kind of looking from here, I mean, we've got kind of the history of it. It started with the game Rogue, essentially, and kind of went from there. I'm kind of looking at the future. Do you think that this is a genre that's going to catch on, or do you think this is kind of a niche market at this point? I mean, mainstream gaming, you don't necessarily hear a lot about this unless you are the type that's kind of over AAA titles and things like that. Do you think this can catch on further?
Well, I was really surprised to see Dungeons of Dreadmoor seemingly doing well. Obviously, we don't ever see like sales figures, stuff like that, but that to see a game that's looks just about as pure of a roguelike as you could release and get away with it today on the commercial market, and hit, and then get, you know, some great reviews, and people are talking about it around the water cooler and whatnot. So, you know, I would have said no, and then here comes Dungeons of Dreadmoor, and then Binding of Isaac had just enough of that to get people talking about it there. Pure roguelikes, you can't really, it's not like someone else is going to come along and keep making more pure roguelikes, just like, hey, look, the graphics are pretty good, but like exact same mechanics, and then really get away with it, because there's too many just free options, and it's also kind of too hardcore. It's a niche genre. But with Binding of Isaac, games like even just Diablo, where you can get some of those elements, you know, it's whether it's just the random dungeons and that kind of thing, or where any of that sort of you know, the bite size kind of stuff, or just some features of from those games that go into other stuff like permadeath, you know, just a straight up turn based dungeon crawler. Like, you'll get elements of that that'll live on, but I don't see pure roguelikes going anywhere commercially. However, people are still making traditional roguelikes online. You know, it's like small teams or one guy, and they just keep making, you know, people want to make their own versions of it, or like Tome. That's like, just got a new version. The dungeon crawl game still gets updates constantly. And like, so those are still being developed, the original kind of style. But as far as the new ones, and again, I was really surprised by Dungeons of Dreadmoor, so we could see somebody else try to, you know, come, you know, off that. And, you know, XBLA has some of these kind of games in it as well, or the indie games at least. And yeah, so, you know, maybe, but I don't know what someone would have to do in order to make these really sort of viable and fresh, I guess. You know, I mean, maybe a more hardcore aesthetic, because Dungeons and Dreadmoor was kind of very tongue in cheek. Obviously, you got killed by potato. So yeah. maybe like something like really kind of hardcore looking would grab people's attention.
Yeah,
something like that, but with similar kind of mechanics, or figure out some way to do a multiplayer version, like some mm-hmm. kind of turn-based co-op thing. I'm not sure how the mechanics would work, because that's always been kind of a big no-no. If you even bring it up amongst like the hardcore guys, they'll say like, keep your co-op out of my roguelikes.
Well, and just kind of talk about Dungeons of Dreadmoor. I think the cool thing about that in terms of its longevity, and maybe where some of its popularity came from, is you have the option to turn the permadeath off, which is which is kind of cool.
Oh, really? You know? I didn't know
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So I think that is almost kind of a good stepping stone, you know? Let's say you came into it with Binding of Isaac. You like that idea of the randomness. You came into Dungeons of Dreadmoor. You weren't quite ready for the permadeath, especially because the amount of time that you're going to put into Dungeons of Dreadmoor could possibly be more so than that of Binding of Isaac. But you can turn that feature off. You can play through. You can get used to it, and you can go from there. Now, I know that the roguelike purist out there would just basically just be rolling their graves if they've all died. I don't think they've all died. You know, that's kind of, I think it's almost, you almost need to kind of build up into being able to deal with the roguelike game. I personally think a multiplayer roguelike game would be cool because it would give people kind of that, almost bring that real life, you know, fear into a game, of dying. You're not going to have people, you know, going on these kamikaze missions, you know, where they don't really care. They're just trying to goof off or whatever. If you have more of a more of a punishment for dying as opposed to just losing some gold or losing, you know, maybe some experience points, I think actually dying would make the game a lot. It'd be a slow paced game. Don't get me wrong, but it would make a game a little bit more tense. You know what I mean? I think that would be cool. Now, talking about the co-op multiplayer and then with the turn based, I think that you're going to have to probably make your adjustments at that point, because again, turn-based co-op or multiplayer games in my experience aren't super fun, but again, roguelike purists more than likely won't like that. But I think kind of the mechanics of that could fit into other games. I look at a game like Project Zomboid, which they're working on just the permadeath, you know, and just that kind of tension that comes from it, which I think, aside from all the other qualities of a roguelike, I think the tension is what's to me the most important aspect of it, because you don't get that many games now. Even, you know, some of the horror games where they're trying to build tension, you can still save, restart where you were at, then you know what's going to happen next. These games, you really don't. And I would almost like to see these games kind of move in a direction using some of those mechanics and go in kind of like the Project Zomboids, have that kind of horror mentality, is the people next to you could be dead, you know, and they're not coming back. And you could literally be all alone. You could go from a group of 20 people to be completely alone. I think that would be really cool. And I think that in playing Project Zomboid, which is not a roguelike, it has roguelike qualities, that tension was just awesome, you know, and you could cut it with a freaking knife. And there's not many games like that out there anymore. And even going to Dungeons of Dreadmoor and Binding of Isaac, you were really tentative about every move that you made. And I would like to see that come back into games more often.
I think the biggest problem with that multiplayer aspect of it, besides the mechanics issues of actually trying to, you know, who goes, when do the monsters go?
Yeah.
You know, after all the players go, that, you know, trying to decide those things. But the biggest problem, and having played Diablo 2 hardcore with some friends, and then then dying, you know, well into the, you know, like a nice co-op session. And then, you know, like, well, you're dead. Okay, so we're going to keep playing. And
yeah.
You can make a new guy and try to catch up, or you can go do something else now. Like that, you get left behind. Like, so if you had, say the two of us were going to play and we're playing some multiplayer roguelike or something, we get pretty deep into it and I die. You got it. You know, I could watch.
Yeah.
You know, good luck. Keep playing. I'm going to go do something else now. Yeah. So that kind of the tension of like, God, I don't want to die because I don't, you know, I don't want you to have to keep going by yourself, or I don't want to miss out on the experience. That kind of thing is, that's something people really haven't touched too much in game design, for those obvious reasons. Most people, that'll happen one time and they'll think like, okay, I'm not going to do that again. And they just won't play.
Yeah.
So long-term viability for something like that is, I think, pretty low. Although, you know, if you're playing online with random people, you don't care because you don't have like a social commitment.
Yeah,
but amongst friends, how, you know, we normally play multiplayer games, that's going to be a huge issue.
Yeah, and I think that's where kind of even going back into the realistic nature of games, and when developers are trying to make games with more realistic qualities, they found out that as cool as it was to have things happen like they would in real life, kind of like building tension, it doesn't necessarily make for a fun game. And so you definitely have to tweak that formula to make, you know, it worthwhile. Because, yeah, I mean, that would totally suck, you know, is to be playing a game with people and then have them still be in it, but you be out and be dead, unless you maybe came back as a ghost that could, you know, I don't know, give them positive reinforcement throughout the whole time, but that's not very fun of a game. So yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's probably where that tension aspect of roguelikes is going to hit its ceiling, you know. In addition to the fact that many people like progression in a game and they don't want to lose that progression because they make one mistake, and these games, it's not even making mistakes, you could do something that completely makes sense and you're going to die. And I think that kind of I know it really, really pisses people off. So I definitely think that it's a great genre or subgenre, but I think that, yeah, just like you said, it's probably gonna be more of a niche type game than one that's gonna be, you know, it's not gonna be the next Call of Duty type first person shooter that everybody plays. I mean, it's definitely gonna be there. There's gonna be, you know, 1,000 or so odd people playing at any given time. But I like the fact that it brought back that old school death is death. Death is death mechanic, and I kind of miss that sometimes. Yeah. You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't think games are too easy, because you can raise a difficulty, but after a while you're going to get into a flow and you don't really have any punitive measures again for dying, and this does definitely, and it's cool because of that. So it really made me remember, you know, the games that I never beat. So
we just play games for different reasons now, you know, like when games were hard, you know, when you had a game like just like Mario Brothers, even Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
Like that was a pretty hard game to just sit down and beat. You know, no one's just picking up the controller the first time and going through that. I mean, as a kid, I just was, you know, I progressively got better, but there were times after, you know, I'd put, you know, 50 hours in that game and I could pick it up and I could get to stage 4 and die, you know? But you still had fun. It was about the experience and the journey and less about just getting the next achievement or unlock or level up or whatever, just trying to see the end of a story. It was about the gameplay. And so the gameplay in roguelikes is like, it's featured, you know, to its like fullest extent. And I do suggest everybody actually goes out and maybe tries, you know, one of these. And maybe it's a Dungeons & Dreadmore, or I do highly recommend Dungeon Crawl. That's my go-to. It's my favorite. And it's still got all those old school characteristics, and it's totally free. But it's a little bit easier to play. It's nice. It's pretty nice to look at. You can use a mouse for some stuff. If you know, so you don't have to necessarily learn all the keyboard commands, but the help interface built in is really good and that kind of stuff. But it's an experience that you gotta, if you don't go into it knowing that, you know you're gonna die, know it's gonna be kind of hard, but know that it's gonna be, you know, it's a exploration kind of experience where you don't know what's gonna happen to you next, and that's where the fun comes in.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and again, even if this sounds completely unappealing to you, if anything, just for the humor, maybe you won't find it humorous, actually, if it enrages you and you push a member of your family down the stairs, and definitely don't play this type of game. But just for the humor that comes from being killed by a potion that makes you explode, or the fact that a potato can kill you, there's something about that. We're just not used to those kind of that kind of conflict. And again, we had a podcast about 2012 just last week, and 2012 will be like a roguelike. Real life is like a roguelike, if you really think about it.
It is. It's filled with randomness. It's got permadeath. It's in real time, but that's okay. Yep. And unidentified items a lot of times, too. You don't know what something is until you use it.
Life is a dungeon. Live it up.
life is a roguelike. I like this.
Oh, boy. So... well, hey, on that note, hopefully we have filled you in a little bit on the very surface of roguelikes, but I think that we could probably go on and on talking about this. And actually, I know that I'm going to go and look up a lot of these games that you talked about, Josh, and, you know, kind of delve deeper into it, because I like getting killed randomly. I don't know what it is. It's probably why I play Battlefield 3, because I suck.
I'm going to go play something right now. Yeah. I'm going to go play real life roguelike. I'm gonna go into someone else's house and see how long I survive.
See what I'm actually kind of nervous. I'd feel really bad if you got a package in the mail and it was a potion. Well, it would be a potion, medicine, and it just killed you. I mean, it'd be ironic, you know, and I think that people would get a good laugh out of that, but we'd probably miss you.
With a scroll of immolation, I guess the real life equivalent would be maybe a letter or envelope with anthrax in it or something.
I hope that doesn't happen.
you know, there's always a chance.
Yep. Life's a roguelike, everybody. on that note, we're going to be signing off. Look for more of these checkpoints. Randomly, our checkpoints are kind of like roguelikes as well. Not necessarily.
Don't feature permadeath.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd like to die if you
listen. I don't think so unless you're not paying attention and you get in a wreck, which I hope doesn't happen to you all. But I'm Ethan Moses, and Josh Lee is here as well. And thank you for joining us.
See ya.
Goodbye.